You've just tuned into Outdoor News Radio, a weekly showcase of the top outdoors writers and experts in Minnesota and across the region. I'm Outdoor News Managing Editor Rob Dreeslein, and I'm honored to have you join us for the next hour as we break down hunting, fishing, and natural resources topics affecting your ability to recreate in the Western Great Lakes and beyond. Our guests might challenge you occasionally, but we promise to entertain you while we're at it. Don't go away, because if you love this state's fine outdoor scene, you'll love Outdoor News Radio. This segment is sponsored by Ducks Unlimited. Join the thousands of volunteers having fun more than 3,500 times a year. Get involved at www.volunteerfordu.org.
Welcome, everybody, to another week of Outdoor News Radio. I am Rob Dreeslein. Thanks a lot for tuning in. Hope you like the broadcast here. If so, check us out on outdoornews.com. We're here every 7 days on this station, so thanks for tuning in. We will have some reports from up north, Duluth, Superior, how the ice fishing season is going in that area later in the show. We'll also check in with Tim Lesmeister, go through some recent headlines here affecting the region. But I want to start out with someone who's never joined me on the broadcast before, in a whole different area of the country. His name is Darrell Smith. He is the president of the Minority Outdoor Alliance. MinorityOutdoorAlliance.org. And I met him this past fall with the Sportsman for the Boundary Waters guys up in northeastern Minnesota, a long way from where he hails, down in Atlanta, Georgia. Darrell, thanks so much for joining me for a few minutes here to talk about what you do. I think you're a fascinating character, and I appreciate you carving out some time for me.
Rob, thank you for having me, my friend. And I was so glad to meet you on the trip, man. It was a great time, and I just love walking the woods with you.
We had a good time. Yeah, we've grouse hunted a little bit. I know you got a squirrel. You got a grouse after I left, I believe, didn't you?
Yes, I did get a grouse a little bit later the day afterwards. Yep.
Okay. We got out fishing on Snowbank Lake, and then we went into the Boundary Waters. We crossed into the wilderness. Was that your first time in the wilderness proper?
That was my first time up there, and I've heard so many just amazing things about the Boundary Waters, but like, seeing it, being a part of it, it's nothing that I would have ever imagined.
So we'll back up here a little bit and talk about you. You've got a lot of things going on. You are a hunting guide. You're a dog man also. Yep. And mostly you're a quail. Is that mostly what you're chasing down there?
Yeah, down here it's quail. You're going to laugh at me. I have kicked up 2 rough grouse in the Appalachian Mountains here. Never got any points on them, but kicked them up. But mostly quail. Yep. Bobwhite quail.
You guide in the region, and somewhere along the line, you decided there was a niche that needed to be opened up for other African-American folks like yourself and other minority groups, to get some exposure to the outdoors. So you launched this group, the Minority Outdoor Alliance. Tell us a little bit about how that happened.
Yeah. So, man, it's funny how things can be cyclical. My wife and we founded Minority Outdoor Alliance in the summer of 2020, right? In the heat of everything. And, you know, I was sitting down, and one thing that we said, we're watching the TV and we're seeing all of this stuff, and I'm looking at all of these great things that I've been able to do in the outdoors from various partners and sponsorships and Orvis this and Beretta that and blah, like working with great people and having this successful career, but also realized how tough it was for me to break into the industry, and the resources weren't there. And I was like, man, like, I'm not blessed with all of this stuff. My wife and I are not blessed with all of this to not give it to somebody else and create opportunities. And right now, in the heat of 2020, we need to use what we have to give back to people, right? Use the resources that we have and create safe spaces in the outdoors that unify people, right? Unify the stories, unify through conservation, through action and advocacy, and just unify through opportunity. And so we founded a Minority Outdoor Alliance, man, and it was like it took off like wildfire, it seemed like. And it was very much so something that was needed. And we started with how do we celebrate this opportunity? So we started with a big festival. It was a Minority Outdoor Alliance Fest. And we did that for the first three years of our organization. We did it in Alabama at Orvis Purcell Farms for the first 2 years. Then we actually went out to Texas and partnered with Texas Parks and Game. But we partnered with them and ran our festival out there. And I mean, we got everybody exposed to my stuff. So I would run a bird dog demo. We would do clay shooting. We would do archery, different rock climbing, just all kinds of things. We would have conservation workshops. And then we would bring in our partners, Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, Pheasants and Quail Forever, you know, so many other different agencies that I don't want to forget. So I'm not going to keep going down the line, you know, but we partnered with a number of different folks. You know, we had a panel, career panel, have folks learn about what it means to work in the outdoors, different positions, help folks get internships. I mean, it was a big shebang. And then from there, we also created some learn to hunt programs. We had one with Pheasants Forever, and we had another with Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. When we came up to Minneapolis to run what we called our Backcountry in Your Backyard.
Darrell, you said that was a couple of years ago you were up here. So you have done events outside the South.
Yes, man, we've actually done more events outside the South than we have in the South. We've done Minneapolis. We did New York off of Fifth Avenue at the Orvis store there. We've done Texas. We've done California in Oakland. We've done in Colorado. We did that for a few years. We've been around.
This is Outdoor News Radio. Rob Jerisline chatting with Darrell Smith. He's the president of the Minority Outdoor Alliance. Darrell, so you launched this thing in 2020. You've had some events around the country. The response has been good. Clearly, there's a void here and a need for an organization like this. You're helping folks who traditionally maybe haven't had as much access to the outdoors get exposed and enjoy these activities.
Yes, sir. It's been great, man. I mean, you never know what people need until you put there what they say. If you build it, they will come.
Sure.
And they have come. And we've had more work than we knew what to do with.
And you've worked with RUMAP out in California, correct?
Yes, I just got back.
An organization out there too, right?
Yep. So she has the Black Heritage Hunt. Rue is a mentor of mine, mentor, friend. And she called me out to be the speaker at the Black Heritage Hunt. So we mentored some folks out there, got them on a duck hunt, and then just had fantastic presentation and talk, man, and fellowship.
I know Rue really likes waterfowl hunting.
Yes. She's
hardcore that way. I bonded with her about that. That's really cool. What do you have upcoming on your calendar? Any events do you think coming back up this way, Wisconsin, Minnesota, yes, in the near future? Or is it more like this festival that you're kind of focusing on?
So we put a pause on the festival just a second to be able to get through our UPCO events. But we're planning to bring some events up there. Our Learn to Hunt workshops. We definitely want to do that again. And also, man, I'm just coming back up there to hunt again. And then also, I'm planning to bring our art show up there as well.
Let's talk a little bit about, you know, the hunting side of things. So did you enjoy chasing rough grouse up here? How are they different from the quail you hunt in the Southeast? So,
all respect given to the king rough grouse. Okay. I used to say King Bob White Quail. Nope. All respect is given to King Rough Grouse. I loved it. I'm hooked. You know, Matt and you and Katie and Lan. I mean, just the idea of fellowship in the woods. And it took me 2 years to get that rough grouse. So I was excited because I had flushed a bunch of them and couldn't get a shot off. So that was a feather in my cap, literally.
Darrell, I'm curious, you know, when you're exposing folks who maybe haven't had a lot of outdoor experience, there's two facets, I think, to what you and I are interested in. One is just getting outdoors and learning how to participate and enjoying the experience. The other part is educating on the conservation component of the outdoors and why that's necessary. How do folks respond to that who you know, didn't grow up? Didn't grow up around that land ethic. How do you go about educating folks in that?
Well, I like to make connections, right? And people respond, they're so happy. And you see a light bulb moment, but I mean, cheesing, Cheshire Cat grinning from ear to ear, you know? I make those connections. I like to talk about childhood. Hunting is in us all, right? you usually have some interest to get outside as a kid. And that's been a common connecting point for people that have never hunted before and people that have hunted their entire lives, right? And then from there, I like to connect people with the fact that there are no coincidences either, right? Like, we're all out here in the woods because we're honoring a call. And once I can get people to recognize that, like, there's a voice in the back of your head that's calling you to the outdoors, I just like to help people identify what that call is. And as soon as they do, I mean, it's a light bulb moment, man. And they turn on and they're eating up with it.
Darrell, do you feel like the outdoor industry and the nonprofit, the NGOs out there have been helpful and enabling to engage with your organization and make these events happen? I sure hope so.
Yeah, brother, we wouldn't be here without the help of our NGO partners. I mean, collaboration and unity is what we stand on, right? You can't do this alone. I mean, Becky Humphreys, Howard Vincent, Rue Mapp, Whit Fosberg, I mean, Lan Tawney, Chris Rockwell, I can go down, Sav Sager. I mean, dude, it took all hands on deck to help us get off the ground, man. And I'm so grateful for everybody. Like I said, if I didn't name anybody, I'm just so grateful that we've had that help. It was like I said, we've had more help than we knew what to do with.
Well, that's a good problem to have. You certainly named some stalwarts in the outdoor industry there, people I know and respect very well. Okay, if folks are out there listening and they're like, yeah, we would like to maybe have an event up here, or I'd like to get involved with this organization, the website, the quickest way to do it, minoryoutdoorsalliance.org.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And I see you're active on Facebook. You're active on Instagram also. So just search Minority Outdoor Alliance that way. And while you're checking out the Facebook, you might enjoy some of Darrell's guitar videos.
Yeah.
They're great.
You're a guitar man too.
A little. I point. You're turning into a great lead guy already. You're working on those Jimi Hendrix solos. And it's, I really tip my hat. I mean, you've been posting these videos since you were a beginner.
Yeah.
And it's been fun to watch you advance. And now you're building a Strat too. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, thank you first and foremost. Yeah, man, I'm right at the end of it. I'm playing it. I want to change the tuning machines out, put some vintage tuners on there. But I mean, I never expected to have so much fun building it. And it sounds like what I had in my head. In vision. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, build a Frankenstrat like old Eddie Van Halen did.
So, right? My last thing, I found a Van Halen vinyl this weekend in San Francisco, just out in the street for free.
Cool. Yeah. Nicely done. Well, thanks for all you do to promote the outdoors. And I want to encourage anybody listening who wants to support the organization, MinorityOutdoorAlliance.org. I hope the new year treats you well, my friend.
You too, my friend. We in this thing. I can't thank you enough for having me on.
Yeah, and let's go hunting again this fall.
Yes, sir. Let's do it.
That was Darrell Smith from MinorityOutdoorAlliance.org. Appreciate him carving out some time for us. Let's grab a break. More of the broadcast after these messages.
Since 1937, Ducks Unlimited has been dedicated to conserving waterfowl habitat, from breeding grounds and migration routes to southern wintering areas. Thanks to the efforts of our volunteers and supporters, we've conserved millions of acres. However, our work is far from over. You can be part of our next million-acre year. Visit ducks.org/volunteer to join the team making a real difference. Ducks Unlimited, conservation for a continent.
By the numbers, here are the costs of not having Onyx fish. 400 extra holes drilled, 100 wasted ice miles, 20 needless gallons of truck, snowmobile, or ATV gas, 5 trips trying to catch a walleye where they don't live, 3 days of vacation you'll never get back, 2 wrong turns that cost you an extra hour at prime time, and one last time you'll waste dollars and effort. Onyx Fish, $34.99 per year, 10 Midwest states, countless ways to catch more fish.
Retirement can be scary, but only if you're not prepared. That's why AARP created thisispretirement.org. Because unless you've already retired, you're in pretirement and you still have time to plan. Learn about retirement savings options, potential tax breaks, and how you can build savings over time. Visit thisispretirement.org for free resources to help you customize your action plan and feel the retirement fear disappear. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Attention hunters, have you bagged an impressive whitetail buck this season? Then show it off at the Outdoor News Best Buck Contest, sponsored by Federal.
The contest runs through January 2026. Bow, rifle, or muzzleloader, all hunters are welcome. Visit OutdoorNews.com for a shot at great prizes and bragging rights. Click the Best Buck Contest link atop the page at OutdoorNews.com to learn more, enter, and view official rules. That's OutdoorNews.com.
Smokey the Bear.
Then you know why Smokey tells you when he sees you passing through. Remember, please be careful, it's the least that you can do.
Don't play with matches, don't play with fire.
After 80 years of learning his wildfire prevention tips, Smokey Bear lives within us all. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com. And remember,
only you can prevent wildfires.
Brought to you by the USDA Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Ice season is here, and when you pull your favorite fish up through the ice, make sure you finish it right. Chef Robert's Gourmet Breading Mix was created by a chef over 40 years ago who just wanted a better fish fry. Today, it's the same great flavor in a resealable 12-ounce bag. Perfect for your kitchen or the hot stove out on the ice. Three flavors, original lemon, pepper, and Cajun. Just wet the fish, coat it, and cook it. That's it. One step from hole to plate. Chef Robert's, when you catch your favorite fish, use your favorite breading. Visit www.chefroberts.com for more information.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Outdoor News Radio. I'm Rob Gerisline. Thanks so much for tuning in. Check us out online at OutdoorNews.com. If you want to see what we're all about, you can subscribe to our print or digital versions there or call us at 800-535-5191. A part of the state we don't probably talk about, or part of the region we don't talk about enough when it comes to fishing, is the incredible opportunities on the Big Lake, the greatest of Great Lakes, Lake Superior and some of the tributaries and other areas along the south and north shore of Lake Superior. I've got a fun guest who's never joined me before, who's going to jump in with us now. It's Captain Jared Houston. He's out of the Twin Ports. He guides open water, and this time of year, you're hitting all the hard water in the area, huh? Jared, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thanks, Rob. First time on here. I feel like the new kid in school sometimes, and here we are. But you know what? We are on the hard water, fishing Lake Superior, St. Louis River, all the nice waters we have in our area. It's kind of weird, Rob. I always tell everybody, you got to pick your poison around here because it's hard to choose. You got a lot of options.
Well, let's talk about what hard water means on Lake Superior. The lake does completely freeze over some years. Some years it does not. That means there's certain areas that are good to fish and relatively safe to fish, and other areas you have to avoid. Can you drill into that for me a little bit, so to speak?
Yeah, 100%. A lot of people that fish around here would understand this, but Lake Superior doesn't really freeze very often. So only select areas, you kind of hit the nail on the head, are the shallow bays, the South Shore, Shawamigan Bay, and moving its way towards the areas of Amnicon are the only areas you can kind of find ice. So the Apostle Islands is kind of our bread and butter. Definitely Shawamigan Bay, where we get to fish every winter, every ice season. Sometimes we have to wait till mid-January. Sometimes we're off by Christmas. This year, we're fortunately enough to get out there already. But as far as the ice, how it forms around Duluth and up the North Shore, that's very seldom. So it's happened a couple times in the last 10 years. But, you know, if we can get, it'd be awesome. If it was up to me, it'd be ice fishing out there every time. But you just got to pick what Mother Nature gives you.
Well, it's a great fishery for a number of reasons, and it's fun to access because you can fish different species that you don't necessarily are able to fish on our inland lakes, right? The trout and salmon. Tell us a little bit about some of those opportunities.
Anybody that's cut their teeth ice fishing usually starts out with fishing panfish or setting tip-ups and catching some pike, this and that. Lake Superior is a different beast, man. It has a lot of mystique to it. It makes you nervous, makes you it's my love, right? Ice fishing, if there's one place in the world I want to go, it's definitely Lake Superior. It's something else to be sitting on a translucent window and looking beneath your feet and seeing crystal clear water. And then when you get a fish hooked up, watching that fish fight and reel it in, it sure is something to experience.
The different species you've got, there's whitefish out there, and then a number of different species of salmon. You got big burbot. But what are the most popular species with your clients when they're on the Big Lake?
Yeah, so when we're fishing Lake Superior, it's kind of fun because you never really know what you're going to catch. We're fishing a lot of diversity. So shallow shoreline areas, you know, we're not going out to the middle where you can't see land. We go as far as maybe 1 mile offshore. So you can always have land in your back shoulder. And you're getting a mix of brown trout, splake trout, whitefish you kind of nailed on the head. We get some big pike that roam through, and of course, walleyes, perch, and those sort of things can happen as well. But for the most part, our customers are always fun, having fun catching the brown trout and the splake trout, the occasional lake trout. And you talked about king salmon. We definitely get a king salmon once in a while. It's a treat, but they can be caught. So you never know what you're going to catch. And that's the beauty of fishing on Lake Superior.
A few cohos kicking around out there.
And a few cohos, correct. Yep. Yeah. Candy on the grill is what a lot of people refer to it as. Yep.
Yeah, the best fishing of all the salmon species. Splake is a cross between a lake trout and a brook trout.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. It's a different beast in itself, because you can catch them near shore like a brook trout, but it fights like a lake trout because it has that, you know, those genetics in it to really not want to come out of the hole. It's a little unfortunate these days that they quit the program of restocking them, and they're going to concentrate efforts more on brown trout. So that's the future for us. So any splake trout you get from here on out, it's kind of like loopers a few years back. They're going to be, you know, one in a million pretty soon. So.
Learning the names and understanding the genetics of all those different fish is complex. I know as a young outdoors writer, it took me a while to figure it out. Loopers, of course, are just a steelhead, right?
Yep. An engineered steelhead is what it is. Yep.
Right.
It's
right.
You got to be kind of a biologist if you're going to be in the game of fishing, and you know as well as anybody, it is complex, 100%. Yeah.
I think they're called loopers because they came from the Kamloops region of British Columbia.
Yep.
And then, you know, the splake thing, I have more detail than listeners want to know, but I always wonder, how do you get SP out of brook trout? And it's because they're also called speckled trout.
Yeah.
And that's how you get splake. So anyway, that area around the Apostle Islands, a ton of structure there, right? That's what partially what makes the fishing so good in that area.
Yep. The contour lines are amazing, right? Big drop-offs, rock piles. You know, there's also some sand and some structure, as well as old pylons and docking areas that have been around for 100 years in some areas that hold fish too. But for the most part, the beauty of fishing out there in the Apostle Islands and Shawamigan Bay is that the fish are never stationary. They're always moving 100 miles an hour. So you're better off really just sitting and waiting it out like a good deer hunter would in a bow stand. If you go and try to chase a fish on Lake Superior, you're really going to be chasing your tail, because you really got to wait for them to swim by, and that's your best tactic to go for them.
I know you referred to that area as the shallows. That's kind of quote unquote shallows, right? It's still Lake Superior. How deep are you fishing when you're in that area?
Well, good question, Rob. So a lot of the fishing we do is actually not much different than the conventional fishing that anybody would be used to in the big walleye factories in Minnesota. 25 feet would be kind of the minimal, although we have fished 15 feet of water, but we kind of bend that out to 85 and 115 feet sometimes when we're going for those deep lake trout or whitefish or herring even that are kind of swimming around that area. But for the most part, our bread and butter is anything near shore, 25 to about 55 feet of water. Tomorrow's guide trip, I'll have customers in one house in about 25, and I'll put the other customers at 55, and we'll have to adjust from there. But that's kind of our bread and butter and our recipe for success.
You're listening to Outdoor News Radio. I'm Rob Gerisline. We are chatting with Captain Jared Houston, HoustonsGuideService.com. You can also follow Houston's Guide Service on Facebook. He runs a guide service out of the Twin Ports, Duluth Superior, and he's having a good time. Ice fishing is running full bore in that region. We talked a lot about Lake Superior, the big lake, but you've got a number of interesting tributaries there, including the St. Louis River. That freezes way up, right? And you're able to get out there and fish that river?
Yeah, 100%. Every winter we can bank on catching some nice walleyes, burbot, pike, perch, and the works on the St. Louis River. It is one of the swept under the rug kind of fisheries for the state of Minnesota and Wisconsin, both. One of the most dynamic tributaries when it comes to migratory walleyes from Lake Superior that interchange between Lake Superior and the St. Louis River. And we've had our finger on that pulse for a long time, and it's probably my favorite place in the whole world to fish. It's hard for me to say that. I shouldn't say that. Lake Superior and St. Louis River are probably my two favorite. But, you know, we've been out there, and we've been out there since Christmas, and we'll continue to be out there till walleye closes.
That is a border water. It's, you know, near a lot of people between the two twin ports.
Yep.
But do you think it gets relatively little pressure compared to, you know, other water bodies?
You know, it does. So in the wintertime, when you're going down the hill into beautiful Duluth and you look over in the harbor areas, you'll see a lot of dots out there, and those are ice houses. You'll never see that amount of boats out there in the summertime, but you will see that amount of ice fishing houses. That doesn't mean that the fish are biting. It's real similar to Lake Superior. You really want to kind of plot your butt down and wait for a fish to swim by. You really don't want to chase them there either. They're, again, fish on the move. They're migratory, and they're kind of moving at the speed of lightning. So you just got to wait for one to pass through, and off you go.
Now, shame on me. I don't know exactly when the walleye season closes there. Is it the same as other inland waters?
No, it is not. February 28th is the last day for Minnesota generally. Mm-hmm. The St. Louis River actually stays open about one more week after that.
Okay.
It's maybe a compromise between Wisconsin and Minnesota that I don't really know the details about, but it's always been a different close. So I don't know off the top of my head without looking at the book, but I encourage anybody that wants to know, definitely, just like anything else, make sure you're up on your regulations when you go fishing anywhere.
So you probably still have good ice then. And are the walleyes beginning to move up that river and stack up during that last week? That's probably pretty phenomenal.
Yep. So some years it's dynamite. It is an absolute magic time of year. And then some years it's dead sea. You never know what you're going to get when you fish these fisheries around here. But we definitely try for them every year. And for the most part, we always pick up some fish. But like I said, some years are magic. And knock on wood, hopefully we're going to have one of those years this year. We'll see.
Overall, how has the bite been this winter? We're hearing it's been a little hit and miss in some portions of Minnesota. How's it been around the Twin Ports?
Well, you're asking a fishing guide how the fishing is. So I have to go about and say that I'm an honest dude, and I'll tell you that we've been hit and miss as well. We haven't had any skunks. We've had nothing but successful customers catching fish here and there with our guide trips. But we've had, you know, slower days, and we've had better days. I always tell my customers when they show up, like, tomorrow, I got nine guys. I'll tell them, I'll line them up like a military line. I'll say, one of you guys ain't going to catch a bunch of fish today, and one of you guys are going to catch a bunch of fish today. And that's kind of fun to see who does what. But yeah, the fishing's been okay. We have to adjust to the weather patterns like anywhere else. And we got quite a bit of weather when it comes to the Twin Ports. So you have to kind of know what you're dealing with when it comes to fronts coming in. Right now, we got a bunch of snow. I kind of mentioned to you before we got on there here, just got done shoveling 10 to 12 inches. That happened. Didn't know that was going to happen last night. They didn't say that on the news. They were a little inaccurate, but you never know what you're going to get, just like the fisheries around here.
Before we let you go, I want to talk open water for just a moment. You talked during the ice season, you're on Squamigan Bay, you're on the St. Louis River, you're hitting some of the flowages in northern Wisconsin, some of the big lakes in Minnesota. But I got to think, when it's open water, you're all about Lake Superior and getting out into deeper water. Is that the program?
Well, you'd be on the contrary. You would be surprised to maybe know that that's not just the case. The state fish in Minnesota is still the walleye. I kind of mentioned it's a well-swept under the rug fishery when it comes to the walleye fish we have in the St. Louis River. So we fish a lot of the St. Louis River in the open water season. With that being said, we also do chase them on the south shore of Lake Superior. We're chasing the migratory fish. So different than ice fishing, we can go after them with our electronics and our boats and stuff. And that's kind of our bread and butter. But definitely the St. Louis River is number one. Lake Superior is number two when it comes to open water.
Gotcha. And so many fascinating species to catch on Lake Superior. Well, thanks so much for joining me for a segment. I want to encourage folks, if they want to see some of your fishing reports, go to HoustonsGuideService.com or follow Jared on Facebook, Houston's Guide Service. Thanks so much for spending a segment with me, and good luck. Be safe and have good fishing the rest of the winter, Jared.
Thanks, Rob. Thanks, anglers. Be good out there.
Captain Jared Houston, Houston's Guide Service out of the Twin Ports of Duluth and Superior. Let's grab a break. More of the broadcast after these messages.
Whatever you're hunting, be it small game, predators, gobblers, or big game, Henry Repeating Arms has a rifle or shotgun you can trust. With over 200 models to choose from, every Henry is proudly made in Wisconsin, backed by a lifetime warranty and supported by top customer service. From the squirrel woods to deer camp, there's a Henry for your hunt. Order your free Henry catalog today at henryusa.com. You'll also get a sheet of decals, the Henry Repeater newsletter, and a personalized list of local dealers. That's henryusa.com. Get your free catalog today and gear up for the season.
You fish the same waters year after year, but what if your next best fishing story is just a few miles away? Onyx Fish builds on 15 years of experience, giving hunters and adventurers a revolutionary angling tool to help you find new water, new access, and new fish. Find the right lake. Know the species, size, and abundance. Get expert local insight. Navigate to the right ramp fast. Then go fish in new lakes like they're your home waters. Don't chase reports. Make your own with Onyx Fish.
Is a trip to Alaska on your bucket list? It's time to dump that bucket and buy your ticket. And while you're there, fish the Kenai River with Jason's Guide Service. Jason is considered the best when it comes to catching Alaskan salmon, rainbow trout, and char. He's one of only a few guides that has the permit to fish in the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge, where the salmon are easy targets and the trout and char are plentiful. So cross that Alaskan fishing trip off your list and check out jasonsguideservice.com. That's jasonsguideservice.com.
The Outdoor News Foundation is dedicated to nurturing the next generation of outdoor enthusiasts. Through your generous donations, we provide youth with access to OutdoorNews.com, educational scholarships, and grants. Every dollar donated goes directly to connecting young people with nature and outdoor activities. Help us cast a legacy for the next generation of outdoor enthusiasts and conservation leaders. Visit OutdoorNews.com to get involved, learn more, and donate today.
Ice season is here, and when you pull your favorite fish up through the ice, make sure you finish it right. Chef Robert's Gourmet Breading Mix was created by a chef over 40 years ago who just wanted a better fish fry. Today, it's the same great flavor in a resealable 12-ounce bag. Perfect for your kitchen or the hot stove out on the ice. Three flavors, original lemon, pepper, and Cajun. Just wet the fish, coat it, and cook it. That's it. One step from hole to plate. Chef Robert's, when you catch your favorite fish, use your favorite breading. Visit www.chefroberts.com for more information.
Have more success on the ice with the LiveScope Plus Ice Fishing Bundle LI from Garmin. Drill fewer holes, catch more fish. This portable live sonar bundle comes with the LiveScope Plus system, EchoMap UHD 93 SV display, and a lithium battery. All packaged in a case, making hole hopping a breeze. LiveScope Plus helps you find more fish with improved resolution, reduced noise, clearer images, and better target separation. Fill your freezer with fillets with help from Garmin. Visit Garmin.com or shop your local Garmin dealer today.
Welcome back, everybody. Outdoor News Radio. Rob Driesline with you. Back half of this week's broadcast with Tim Lesmeister. If you like the chatter here, check us out online at OutdoorNews.com or call us at 800-535-5191. You can read both Tim and I at OutdoorNews.com. Mr. Lesmeister joins us now. How are you doing, Timmy?
Doing great.
Yeah, we had a story in this week's paper about southern bass fishing destinations. Of course, you're down south, and you know, the theme was, hey, it's pretty locked up here. If you're someone that has to get access to a little open water, there's some great destinations. I mean, some of the best bass fishing in the world is down south if you want to catch big fish.
Yes, and I'm going to highly recommend something. I'm down here bass fishing in Florida quite a bit, and I have worked really hard to understand the waters in Florida. And I'm telling you right now that if you want to get into some good, really good bass fishing, don't come to Florida. And the reason why I say that is because when you're fishing up north in Minnesota or Wisconsin or the Dakotas, Iowa, these upper Midwestern states for bass, you know, you're basically using just about every lure you can imagine, fishing top water, down deep, and everything in between. You don't do that in Florida. And here's why. Because every bird that is in the air wants to eat the fish. We've got pelicans, and we've got seagulls, big, huge seagulls. I mean, there's everything you can think of that is flying around, wants to drop down onto a lake and whack a bass or a sunfish or a crappie or anything. And so with these fish, they hide in the weeds, and I'm talking deep in the weeds, and they also stay really tight to bottom. And you got to know that in most of these lakes down here are very shallow, and so their oxygen levels are top to bottom. And there's not a whole lot of structure or not a whole lot of cover unless someone's sunk something into the lake. And you got to find that on your own in a lot of cases. So you come down here and you think, well, I'm going to go fish the weed beds, and you're trying to cast a weed line. Weed lines don't have any fish on them. You know why? Because as soon as that fish comes up within about 2 feet from the surface of the water, a pelican drops down there, just dives into the water, boom, grabs it. What you want to do is you want to stay up north. Get into some of those Tennessee waters. Some of that stuff that's in northern Alabama or Texas, you'll find there that the bass relate a little bit more to what you're used to fishing. Even though you might not find a lot of vegetation in these reservoirs, at least you're fishing bass that will come up to the surface. Down here in Florida, they don't do that. It's a totally different game.
You know, like Rapala's got that DT series, Dives 2 series, that I bet is perfect for targeting bass in the lakes you just described, because it goes down to a certain depth and it stays there on the bottom where these bass are frequenting.
phenomenal lures for that kind of thing. Yes, you want a lure that you know exactly where it's running. And you'll do a lot of trolling, too. You troll around because you're looking for that piece of structure. And it could be like five Christmas trees that somebody has sunk. They're making this stuff out of PVC pipe. And they do that. They sink this stuff in these bodies of water down here in Florida. And then you've got to find it if you're going to find fish. Sometimes you'll find them out in the middle open water. We crappie fish on a lake not too far from me here in Tarpon Springs, big Tarpon Lake. Full of good crappies, nice big 12 to 14 inch crappies. And you're basically taking small crankbaits out there and you're trolling very slow, like 0.7, 0.8 miles an hour. And you'll bang those crappies. And when you hit one, you're going to find another 25 in that school. So you just basically punch in a coordinate on the GPS and you stay there. But here's an interesting thing. I had my brother-in-law and my son here not too long ago. We were fishing for crappies out on Tarpon Lake. We were trolling these small crankbaits, and my brother-in-law hooked one, and he brought it in too fast. And what happened is it came up to the surface, and it was dancing across the surface. Pelican flew down, grabbed it, and got hooked. So we had to reel this pelican into the boat, and that's hard to do.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty much had to chase it with the boat, actually, is what we did until we got it close enough to be able to grab it. We didn't hurt the bird. But the bird would like to hurt us.
Yeah.
And they've got a big hook on that bill, I'll tell you. So we were able to use a long nose plier. I got really long pliers, pop that lure out of its mouth. We didn't want to lose it. It was catching all the crappies. And then let that bird go. But that's one of the things you got to be looking out for is those crazy birds that want to dive down and grab the fish.
Yeah, they're big and nasty. There were a number of spots featured in this piece, Tim. Kissimmee Chain of Lakes in Florida, Lake Guntersville in Alabama, Pickwick Lake on the border of several states there. Toledo Bend, Texas, Louisiana, Sam Rayburn in Texas. Anyone who's followed, you know, like the Bassmaster Elite Series, those recognizes some of those names because those are popular waters for some of those big national bass tournaments. Do you have experience on some of those?
I have fished them all. And I think my favorite is probably Pickwick. I really do like that lake. I was down there probably 8 years ago. And I love Pickwick. It's a phenomenal lake. A lot of hard bottom structure. You're fishing a lot of rock and rubble and big sand flats. It's a great lake. I like Sam Rayburn in Texas. Has got some really big bass in it. The Kissimmee Chain used to be considered one of the big monster bass lakes. People were going in there and fishing these shiners, drifting them along the hydrilla. Oh my gosh, you'd catch some monsters out of the Kissimmee Chain. Not quite as big as they used to be because, you know, the angling pressure, and I'm sure that bass tend to cycle a bit too, but still one of the best destinations in Florida for good bass fishing. And I, if you want to get open water, I wouldn't rule out crappie fishing either. There's some incredible crappie lakes when you head south, especially in Tennessee.
Outdoor News Radio, Rob Gerisline and Tim Lesmeister are talking a little bit. We talked southern bass fishing a little bit. Before our next break, Tim, there were a couple letters to the editor that you liked in this week's print version of Outdoor News. Which ones jumped out at you?
Two that I agree with 149%. It would be 150%, but anything that makes me laugh this hard, I got to knock a percent off. And one of them was basically extending the pheasant season through January. I think it's a great idea. I've tried to promote that for years and years and years. I don't understand why we can't hunt pheasant in Minnesota. If you got a problem with numbers, just drop the limit from 3 down to 2. You know, they bumped the limit up to 3. Maybe January 1st it goes back to 2, and then we can keep the season open till the end of the month. I think it's a great idea because I love cold weather. I love the iced lakes, and I love the cattail slough hunting. That's, to me, the best pheasant hunting of the year is when your mustache has icicles hanging off of it. So I agree with this guy. Let's get that season opened up all the way through January.
The letter writer making the point that every year doesn't necessarily mean it'll be good hunting in January, but this guy thought it would have been really good this year. Oh. The conditions were perfect. And are there other states, Tim, where it's open later like that?
I think most states that have pheasant seasons run them through January, so I think Minnesota should join the crowd.
I mean, we have gradually liberalized that hunt over the year. It used to be a real strict stop at the end of the year. Sometimes now it goes into the new year a little bit. And then we also liberalized the limit. So they're trying some things, but pheasants are a non-native bird. They're numbers are up and down. They're not like ducks, you know, where I do worry about hunting pressure on those birds. I have no problem with that.
Neither do I. Now, this other letter was great because it was just basically one sentence long. And it said, I long for the good old days when you could go out on the ice to fish and not have to listen to all of the generators that surround you. And he's right. It seems that these wheelhouses and even these stationary shelters, they all want to have a generator. Now, there's some real quiet generators out there. I think that a few brands make them very, very quiet. But even then, when you got 10 of them going within 100 yards of you, you're going to hear some noise. And some of them are just downright uglily loud. I don't think that's a word, but I just made that up. But it makes sense to me that they're just uglily loud. And I think that we should figure out some way of maybe getting to the point where we just don't allow so many generators out there. I don't know how you do that. I don't know how you'd restrict that, but boy, it's bad.
It's another technology issue. I mean, we're a long ways from going out with a pair of felt pack boots and a twiggle stick. You know, you'd wrap the line around a couple of pegs. That's how I remember ice fishing when I was a kid. And the whole industry is built up around the hard water season with all this equipment. And like we talked about forward-facing sonar, I don't know if we'll get the toothpaste back in the tube, Jim. You'll stick around if we take a break?
Yeah, I think we should talk about the forward-facing sonar when we come back because it's not just forward-facing anymore.
A very good point, yeah. Don't go away. More Outdoor News Radio after these messages.
By the numbers, here are the costs of not having Onyx fish. 400 extra holes drilled, 100 wasted ice miles, 20 needless gallons of truck, snowmobile, or ATV gas, 5 trips trying to catch a walleye where they don't live, 3 days of vacation you'll never get back, 2 wrong turns that cost you an extra hour at prime time, and 1 last time you'll waste dollars and effort. Onyx Fish, $34.99 per year, 10 Midwest states, countless ways to catch more fish.
You took the first step and quit smoking. But even former smokers may still be at risk for lung cancer. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know about a new low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early. It takes only 60 seconds and could save your life. You took the first step, now take the next. Visit SaveByTheScan.org for a simple quiz to see if you're eligible and talk to your doctor about screening. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, a nationwide group working to keep public lands in public hands so future generations can enjoy what we enjoy. Join the group that makes a difference. Check us out at backcountryhunters.org.
Are you ready to hit the frozen waters and reel in some epic catches? The all-new OutdoorNews.com is your ultimate resource for all things ice fishing. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, OutdoorNews.com is the source for the latest tips, techniques, and gear reviews. Stay ahead of the rest with the most up-to-date ice conditions, fishing reports, and hotspots to maximize your success. Don't miss out on this incredible opportunity to elevate your hard water game. Visit OutdoorNews.com today and become part of the ice angling revolution.
Hey, Steve Panaz here. For too long, Minnesota anglers have not had a strong voice at the legislature or the DNR. You can help ensure the quality of state fisheries by joining the MinFish Sport Fishing Foundation. Individual memberships are free and life memberships are available. MinFish Foundation is dedicated to restoring, protecting, and enhancing Minnesota's sport fishing opportunities. To join us, visit min-fish.com.
Whatever you're hunting, be it small game, predators, gobblers, or big game, Henry Repeating Arms has a rifle or shotgun you can trust. With over 200 models to choose from, every Henry is proudly made in Wisconsin, backed by a lifetime warranty and supported by top customer service. From the squirrel woods to deer camp, there's a Henry for your hunt. Order your free Henry catalog today at henryusa.com. You'll also get a sheet of decals, the Henry Repeater newsletter, and a personalized list of local dealers. That's henryusa.com. Get your free catalog today and gear up for the season.
As farmers and ranchers, stewardship of the land comes naturally. You help keep water clean, improve the soil, and provide habitat for wildlife. But did you know conservation can also improve your bottom line? Learn more at conservationpays.org.
Everybody, welcome back. Outdoor News Radio, Rob Gerisline and Tim Lesmeister bringing it home. Check us out online at outdoornews.com if you like the discussion here. or you can call us at 800-535-5191 and subscribe to our print or digital versions. Tim, real quick, you brought up forward-facing sonar. Yeah, it's not just forward-facing anymore, is it?
What they're doing now is in your boat. You know, now in your boat, if you want to have the forward-facing sonar, you usually put a transducer on the shaft of your bow mount trolling motor, and you can use that to kind of rotate it. And a lot of guys don't do that. They'll have it on a separate shaft with a handle, and you rotate the handle to get the sonar to shoot in a different direction wherever you point it. And with the new ones now, you don't have to move anything. You just put the transducer on the boat, and it's going to shoot a full 360 degrees for you to get a picture of what's going on down below the boat. That's incredible.
There's a lot of guys, right, that would have three or four of these forward-facing sonars, you know, on all around their boat, on the rim of their boat, right, so they could get that 360-degree perspective. Now, what, you'll be able to do it with one unit? Happening quickly, isn't it?
That's happening very quickly with one unit. Yeah, you're right. You'd see these guys out there fishing, and they'd have literally four big sonar screens, each one of them with a forward-facing sonar transducer, all shooting in a particular direction, north, south, east, right, west, and they could see everything around the boat. You won't need that anymore. One screen, one deucer, and it'll do it all for you.
It's happening very quickly. We got a press release about that last week, and I'm sure we're going to see a lot more. I think it was Lowrance, right, that we had the press release from last week.
And they seem to be pioneering this, and I think that everybody else will be right behind them.
Tim, let's talk deer for a few minutes. Interesting report from Eric Morkin, the National Deer Association, a week or so ago released its annual deer report that looks at nearly everything pertaining to whitetails. Eric pointing out that he thought two things stood out. Whitetail hunters in the U.S. shot more than 3 million antlerless deer for just the third time in 11 years, and the percentage of 3.5-year-old and older bucks in the antler buck harvest was the highest ever. Antlerless harvest, 3.146, well, almost 3.147 million whitetails. And this is kind of in the traditional whitetail range. That's where they're getting these numbers. So a lot of state agencies, along with the National Deer Association, have been encouraging hunters to take more antlerless deer so we can have an older herd with more bucks, you know, bigger bucks. And it seems like it's starting to take with the general hunting public.
Yeah, this is what you call the quality deer management.
Right.
Well, I think that's what's happening here is that they have been giving more antlerless tags out over the years to try and keep their population in check. And what they've seen is the result of this is that you're seeing more mature bucks. People love seeing these mature bucks. They love seeing these big antlered deer. And you're also seeing hunters taking more of these big antlerless deer as they start to grow to a point where they become something that somebody wants to put on their wall, trophy.
Total whitetail harvest of about 6.2 million deer, the highest since 2020, fifth highest in modern records. So that's good. I mean, we've been a little worried about deer numbers nationwide. It's nice to see those rebounding and or, at least maybe a lot of hunting pressure. Another interesting stat, the percentage of yearling bucks shot in the harvest nationwide was 23%, an all-time low. So that's good. Again, if you want more bucks, leave the yearlings alone to grow. The percentage was lowest in the Southeast. The Northeast was at 31%, Southeast at 14%, Midwest a little bit in between at 28%. Those Southern boys, they really adhere to QDM, it would appear. I mean, they're doing a really good job down there of not shooting yearling bucks. And what's that about? Is it a lot of private land? Is it peer pressure? What do you chalk that up to?
I do attribute it to private land, private ownership, and these people wanting to see bigger deer. You'll hear this all the time. We don't shoot anything down here that's less than 10 points. And I'm like, geez, those are big deer. And you look at the top states for antlered buck harvest, Texas, 425,000 deer. Pennsylvania came in second, but then Wisconsin, then Michigan. So there's some northern states that are getting in on the big buck harvest too. But Alabama, most of them are, states that come in down south. The highest percentage of 3.5-year-olds is Oklahoma, Mississippi, Louisiana, Texas, and Arkansas. Not one state north was in the high percent for 3.5-plus-year-olds in the buck harvest. So, yeah, you're right. It's the southern states that I think are practicing the best quality deer management. And they got the habitat and they got the genetics to do it.
When I hunted the South many years ago in the 1990s, I remember being coached up on, don't take the mature doe, take the yearling doe, you know, that whole business. And I remember at the time thinking, wow, that was a long time ago. It's probably come a long way since then. Outdoor News Radio, Rob Dreisein and Tim Lesmeister are wrapping up this week's show. We just got a minute left here, Tim. We had a shark attack, a Minnesota woman killed down in St. Croix, huh?
Yeah, that's sad. It was a 56-year-old woman from Detroit Lakes. She was down in the St. Croix, U.S. Virgin Islands, and they said that this shark was very close to shore. Now, it doesn't take a very big shark to do you damage, and I've seen this before. I've been all over scuba diving and snorkeling, and I've been around sharks quite a bit. But what always amazes me is that people don't seem to take much stock in getting out of the water when there are sharks present. And I know that sometimes if there's a lifeguard present, they'll be yelling at you, get out of the water. But people don't. They see the fin, or they might even see the shark, and they just keep swimming. And I'm like, what is going on? This shark, if it decides that it wants to take a bite out of you, not necessarily eat you, just to figure out what you are. Remember, they don't have hands. They can't reach out and touch you. The only way they can get a feeling for what you are is to bite you. And that's what they'll do. So I say, when you look at a situation like this where somebody dies from a shark attack, it ought to be something that you look at as an example to be very careful when you're in any waters. I'm in Florida a lot, and I go in the water here in Florida to fish. I'm up to my waist sometimes, but I'm always on the lookout for shadows in the water and shark fins. And when I see one, I'm gone.
I talked to some retired surfers in North Carolina, and one of them, it was a gal, said she really enjoyed the sport, but she'd just been bumped by sharks one too many times. She just figured her number was coming up, so she retired from surfing. And again, you and I talk, we don't want to scare people from going out of doors, but you do need to be aware of your surroundings. I had a son got stung by a stingray a couple of years ago. It was nasty. He was in a lot of pain. We learned something that day. And again, just know your surroundings.
Absolutely. And it's never stopped me from slapping a tank on my back or throwing a snorkel on my face and heading out into the water to have some fun. I still grab my surf rods and I go out and wade out in the water up to my waist, but I'm always wearing hard-soled shoes. So if I do step on something, it's not just stingrays, it's anemones, it's certain things that have spines. You just got to be careful, and it could be even glass in the water. So, yeah, always be out on the lookout for those fins. And occasionally you'll see a fin and it'll scare you. You run out and you look back and, oh, well, it was just a dolphin.
Right. Yeah,
but at least I'm getting the heck out of there anyway, you know.
Yeah, I see a lot of dolphins in North Carolina. Anyway, Tim, fun chat. We'll talk to you in a week.
Sounds good. We'll catch up to you soon.
Before we go, a little late-breaking news I wanted to share with this week's listeners. This past week on Wednesday, Representative Pete Stauber's House Joint Resolution 140, which used the Congressional Review Act to challenge the 20-year Boundary Waters mineral withdrawal that was implemented under the Biden administration, that Stauber bill passed the House. A lot of my Boundary Waters friends were watching that one really close. The resolution now heads to the Senate, and as of the middle of this past week, the Senate parliamentarian had not made a ruling yet on whether or not the Congressional Review Act applied and whether the Senate would vote. A lot of folks advocating for protection in the Boundary Waters saying that this unprecedented use of the Congressional Review Act was unacceptable. And it aims to, you know, ease protections for mining in the vicinity of the Boundary Waters wilderness. Not in the wilderness, but folks are concerned about runoff and that sort of thing. So we'll watch close to see if the Senate takes this up also. The bill passed on mostly a party line vote, like everything in Congress these days. It's unfortunate. Some of us remember when conservation was nonpartisan. With that, thank you to Tim Lesmeister, all my other guests. Everybody have a great week out of doors. Rob Dreisein signing off for Outdoor News Radio.
Missed a segment from this week's edition of Outdoor News Radio? You can hear a podcast of the complete program at OutdoorNews.com or via your favorite podcast streaming platforms. And for the rest of the story on the topics we cover here on the program, get yourself or a friend a subscription to Outdoor News. Just visit OutdoorNews.com. And don't forget to join us next week on this station to talk everything out of doors.